GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar.
Our continuing coverage of the murder trial of Sharon Carrillo in Waldo County Superior Court. Brett Baber from Lanham, Blackwell, and Baber, our partner in legal briefs. George, he's up early. He's on line three to talk with us on GHRT.
Good morning, Brett. Nice to have you back again.
Always a pleasure. Good morning, George. Good morning, Rick.
We have elephant in the room questions for you.
Oh, we're probably both of us going the same way.
Because George and I exchanged text messages, and you can probably imagine it has to do with the Fifth Amendment, Brett.
Sure. I understand that on Friday, the defense in the Sharon Carrillo case called her husband, Julio Carrillo, and before he was allowed to take the witness stand, presumably an attorney on behalf of Julio Carrillo alerted the court that he would be invoking the Fifth Amendment right to avoid self-incrimination. So the court, Justice Murray, held a hearing outside the presence of the jury. These situations where somebody might invoke the Fifth Amendment are always conducted outside the presence of the jury, unless it comes up sort of generically or during the course of a trial. Justice Murray conducted this hearing in which the defense lawyer, Chris McLean, was allowed to ask Julio Carrillo a series of questions. And to each one of the questions, Mr. Carrillo invoked his Fifth Amendment right to avoid self-incrimination, which is causing me to scratch my head a bit, and I'm sure the two of you as well and our listeners, as to why somebody who pled guilty to murder already would be permitted to invoke his Fifth Amendment right, because he's already been convicted. In fact, he pled guilty, so he did incriminate himself by entering a guilty plea, but apparently there are some post-conviction procedures that he's undertaking in his case. I don't know if there was a direct appeal on some preliminary issues in the trial. That would be the only type of post-conviction procedure that I would think would shut down or would allow his Fifth Amendment to still apply. So he may have appealed some post-trial rulings in his own case, or he may be filing post-conviction relief, habeas corpus proceedings, claiming he had ineffective assistance of counsel, which Justice Murray might have concluded allow Mr. Carrillo to still invoke his Fifth Amendment rights. And yet there's still another possibility. Mr. Carrillo has not been convicted of abusing Sharon Carrillo, so he may very well be subject to potential jeopardy for assaulting or abusing his wife. So those are the possibilities, I think, are coming into play, especially, you know, narrowing it down. But Justice Murray's
on the PD Cudor telephone line, Brett Baber from Lanham, Blackwell, and Baber, our continuing coverage of the murder trial of Sharon Carrillo. Brett, by calling Julio Carrillo and the witness not hearing his testimony because he takes his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, is that a win for the defense, do you think?
It's not a win to the extent that they're now not allowed to present Mr. Carrillo as a witness. If that had all gone on in front of a jury, that would have been helpful, but it didn't occur in front of a jury or their jury. But it is part and parcel of the overall theme of their case, in which they are presenting numerous witnesses that either saw or heard Julio Carrillo abusing Sharon Carrillo. So it's not a win. It's not a loss. I'm not even sure it's something they can appeal. I suppose if they believe Justice Murray committed a legal error in this ruling and prevented Julio from testifying, then that may be something in their laundry list of issues for appeal in the event that Sharon is convicted.
Brett, they didn't get Julio on the stand, but what they did get was a forensic psychologist who said that Sharon Carrillo was a heightened risk for a false confession. Now, the psychologist said that Carrillo has three disorders, including major depressive disorder. And this could or may not sit well with the jury. At least they did get that much in.
Yes. The defense were still in the defense case in chief, and the defense presented a number of lay witnesses on Friday testifying to various abuse, and it sort of culminates with this forensic psychologist, Michael O'Connor, who testified about the psychological disabilities that she experiences in her adult life. And he essentially testified that the police leveraged Sharon's fear of Julio during the interrogation process into getting her to say things that really weren't true, or that's the defense claim. On cross-examination, the state was able to, you know, the state gets to take a swing back every time the defense puts witnesses on, and the state cross-examined the forensic psychologist, pointing out that Sharon had recently taken two college courses, didn't say how well she did on those courses, and they asked the forensic psychologist whether Sharon could appreciate the wrongfulness of her conduct, and the psychologist said yes, indeed she could. So that, you know, the state's taking their, getting their themes in as well when they're cross-examining various defense witnesses.
When the contractor for the Department of Health and Human Services testified, and your colleague Steve was on with us the next day, we did take a moment to just mull over the idea that how could someone miss the level of abuse that this child was enduring. Friday, the jury heard testimony from a former neighbor of the Carrillos, who recounted the tale of them moving in and the child drops the box and Julio Carrillo slaps the child upside the head and throws the child's teddy bear in a dumpster. Once again, we have a situation where someone is seeing something, but, well, in this case, they said something, but they didn't see any action taken by the state, Brett. That's troubling.
It is very troubling, and there was, I'm not sure if it was the same neighbor or a different neighbor in Bangor that had made repeated calls to the DHHS and to the Bangor police indicating that, and it got so bad, and they were calling in to report Julio abusing both Sharon and Marissa Kennedy, that it got so bad that these neighbors were almost ready to take matters in their own hand and were confronting Julio, and the police arrived and told him to back off and they would handle it. So, you know, we have testimony from these neighbors of this horrendous abuse going on, and as you pointed out, nothing happened. And it is very troubling, Rick.
The stepmother, Roseanne Kennedy, also was on the stand testifying that Carrillo never spoke her first word until she was about 5 years old and was then diagnosed with broad-based learning disabilities, and later said that when she became pregnant, she knew that she did not have the intellectual ability to care for a child. So every bit of this seems to mount up in the defensive case. Whether the jury's buying it or not remains to be seen.
Keep in mind, the defense is attacking the state's ability to prove the charge of depraved indifference murder beyond a reasonable doubt. So this is all incremental. And the defense, being what it is probably going to put on a lot more evidence than they might otherwise. They just have, you know, because this is such a heinous offense, they're going to put on every potential witness to describe, Sharon's life early on, her intellectual disabilities, all of the instances of abuse. The defense has done a really solid job of getting their investigators out into the community, finding these witnesses, arranging for them to testify. This is not easy work. It's a tremendous effort by Mr. McLean and his staff to get all these people to testify. As you point out, a jury might disagree, but this is creating a tremendous uphill issue for the state to overcome in trying to, you know, meet its burden of proof that Sharon Carrillo did engage in deliberate indifference murder.
And we're still puzzled that Shauna Gatto's name, the woman convicted in the death of Kendall Chick, a 4-year-old in Wiscasset, is still on the list of possible witnesses. Don't know if it's going to happen. That's another head-scratcher, Brett.
Yes. We've talked about it a couple times. I can't imagine I could see her being on the witness list for the state if she were incarcerated with Sharon and Sharon said something. Usually, if it's something favorable that Sharon said, that, you know, I was just getting it, you know, constantly being abused by my husband or something like that, it may be excluded, you know, because Shauna Gatto would, in essence, be repeating something. It's technically hearsay. It's probably inadmissible. You can put people on the witness list, even though their testimony might not be admissible, and just leaves us scratching our heads, as you say.
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.